I feel like probably like 80% of the PMs out there are pretty bad. And I think 10% are okay. And I think 10% are amazing. I think the reason why is because like what makes like a great PM is they're kind of obsessed with finding truths.
This is Aaron and Ash. You're listening to Path into Product, a show for students and professionals considering product management as a career. We interview actual product professionals and share their insights and tips for getting into the rewarding career that is product management. Welcome back, Path into Product listeners. We're glad you are here. Today we have Daniel Falabella, who is a GM of the Duolingo ABC app and Senior Director of Product. He's bringing 9 years of product and entrepreneur startup experience. And so we're so glad to have you today, Daniel.
Happy to be here.
We're going to kick things off with a simple question, and that is, what is product management?
Oh, shoot. You got to start there with a dictionary definition of product management. I don't know, man. Yeah. Product management. I think product managers are responsible of building the how, what, when, and why type of thing. So at the essence, product managers strive to build products that people love.
I love that. Well, we want to jump in and we want to learn about you, Daniel. We want to know what your path into product has been. And so take some time and tell us a little bit about your path into product.
So how I got into product, so, you know, a little bit myself, I'm originally from Guatemala. I went to BYU, I studied business strategy. I was going to do management consulting. And then I realized that's a big scam. Management consultants are just, there is just a scam. And so I didn't want to work for a scam. So, you know, I did a Deloitte consulting internship and I was like, this is a big scam. And so I was like, you know what, what's the opposite of consulting is like actually building something that people love. And so I decided to just start my own company. And I did that with a few co-founders. We did that for 3 years and we got our butts kicked big time. And it was the most fun, best 3 years and worst 3 years of my life. You know, like it's brutal. And it's the most that I've learned, and I want to do it again. It was just so great and horrible at the same time. It's, I don't know how to what to compare this to, but so I did that for 3 years in Utah, building software and some physical products, trying to stay alive. And then when we really realized that this wasn't, we were a software company, and at some point I think we had like 12 people working with us some capacity at some point, and we had like 300,000 users and whatnot, and we were making some money. And then it would just all went to crap. And then we had no software engineers and we were a software company. So that's when you realize, okay, this is not working. So I ended up leaving. I joined a company called Jane.com, which is an e-commerce marketplace in Lehi in Utah. They were doing pretty decent at the time. I don't really know what they're up to nowadays. It's been a while, but I was there. I joined as a software engineer. You know, I had learned to code a little bit here and there, and I landed a job as a software engineer. I was really enjoying it, and I was doing okay at it, I thought. And but the company had no product managers, and so there was no one kind of taking product direction. And so the CTO came to me and said, "Hey, the CEO and I were thinking of hiring our first product manager, and we actually think you'd be a great fit. Would you mind doing it part-time, like half of your time PM, half of the time software engineer?" My answer was, what is a product manager? Like, I never heard that before. I've only heard project manager. Like, so I was like, how is project manager different than product manager? Don't even know what this is. He didn't know how to answer. So I remember him pulling his computer and we just like Googled it together. And he's like, it seems like the differences are... Anyways, and we just kind of like read it for like 5-10 minutes. And then, you know, I went back home, talked to my wife, like, we're going to do this because I feel like if I end up saying yes, there's a chance that I'm not going to be a software engineer anymore. And I really like building stuff. We decided to say yes because I didn't have much to code anyways because no one was telling me what to build. It was just a little bit kind of weird. And so I joined as a PM. And then I realized, holy smokes, there's so much that I don't know about product management. But I was basically head of product at Jane.com because nobody else was a product manager. And so I was the head of product management, you know, that was just a PM. And that's how I got into product. Happy to tell you a little bit the rest, but you want me to jump into that?
Yeah, absolutely.
Sure. So, okay. So I did that. I really enjoyed it. And then eventually I switched to Lucid Software, where they had a more robust product management at the time, more robust product management function built. And I just really wanted to learn. I work with a guy called Jorge Masal, who was the director of product at the time. He was in a nonprofit before. I used to volunteer there. So that's how I met him. And so I knew him and he interviewed, you know, we got interviewed and stuff and got hired. I was at Lucid Software for a while. I was over all the core experience. So I think it was like 70% of the code base and basically everything that you see that like helps you diagram. Like I was the PM over all that stuff. And I was there for, I don't know, a year and a half, 2 years, can't remember. And then I went to Dropbox for a little bit. That was probably the biggest mistake I've done in my career. I do love Dropbox and I love the people there and the product and the culture and the food. They have amazing food. Oh my gosh. They have this basically half of a floor just for restaurant. They're like, it was great. But it was like a week or so into it that I realized it was a huge mistake for a number of reasons. And then so I ended up quitting after like a few months. And then I joined Duolingo, where I've been for a little over 3 years. I first started as senior PM and I helped build the learning like area basically. So we had like, I think at the time, like 10 people working on learning related stuff, Duolingo. And we grew that to 110 people that were all seeking to increase the efficacy of Duolingo language learning app. And then I switched to be a general manager at ABC a few months ago. So that's my entire professional life there.
I'm coming back to this moment when you're sitting down, I think you said it was with your CTO and, you know, he or she says, let's make you a product manager. And you say, well, what is that? And, oh, I don't know. Let's Google this together. Like go back to that moment for us. And what were you thinking? What were you feeling? Why would they ask you to do something that they didn't even know what it was?
So, you know, the company was being very successful, but the decisions of kind of what to build next and how to grow the company were basically relying on the shoulders of the CTO. So he had a fairly good idea of what he wanted to do. He just didn't know the nuances of the difference between project management and product manager. Turns out, you know, like the PMs, like you can end up doing some project management as well, you know, making sure like things are getting done and being built. And so there's some kind of overlap there to some degree. I feel like probably like 80% of the PMs out there are pretty bad. And I think 10% are okay. And I think 10% are amazing. I think the reason why is because like what makes like a great PM is they're kind of obsessed with finding truths. When you see kind of all the bad PMs out there, they start doing things like, oh, I talked to 4 people and this is what they said. So let's pivot and let's do this for next year. Like this is what 4 people told me. And like I talked to people and this is what they said, you know? And well, yeah, talking to people, it's great, but that doesn't necessarily mean that that's a very superficial way of seeing the world, right? Or you can say, oh, I read like 20 app reviews and I've noticed a pattern. So we're going to do this for the next few months. Or like, oh, you know, like I think that I'm brilliant. This is my idea of where we should go. And here's my logic and my strategy. And they're like all very superficial going through the motions. And like, I did this brainstorming. Here's like 2 most popular ideas. And so that's what we're going to do. Who cares about the brands? Who cares? Like, what does it matter if your engineer thinks this is a good idea or if you think it's a good idea? Who cares? So the best PMs are people who are like, that I found, people who are obsessed with finding truths. Why are users behaving this way? Why isn't our product growing? What do our numbers actually look like? Do we notice a trend there? And what's causing this? What is actually causing this? And they're ruthless and they spend sometimes a little too much time finding out like what's actually happening. Because once you know what's happening, it's a lot clearer to know what you should do next. And so what happened to me at Jane was I was so used to being obsessed with finding truth because I had to work on a startup where there was no way to hack it. You couldn't hack your career by sending good emails or creating a great presentation or communicating clearly or doing good stakeholder management. None of that stuff mattered. The only thing that mattered when you're doing a startup was, did you build something that people use and love? Nothing else mattered, right? Even if you're really good at like lying to investors and landing a big Series A, if you don't build a good product, that's not going to help you. You're going to run out of money and you're still going to fail. So he's kind of, I think he saw some of that in me of like, I was always like, wait, why are we doing this? Like, can we consider doing this way? Here's kind of, and I would always come to him with data and stuff like that. And so that's why he thought I would be a good fit. And I think it ended up working out.
You kind of alluded to this already, but I'm, you know, in that startup phase, what did you learn during that startup phase that helped inform how you approach product management today?
You know, I think I talked about truths. I think that's probably the biggest one, if I'm being honest. But the other one is like, obviously I want to keep getting promoted. Obviously we'll want to get paid more, but the thing that I value the most is freedom. And so I do a lot of things that help me get more freedom, more autonomy. And I see a lot of people in my career where they're optimizing for title, scope, and revenue, and you know their salary basically. And when they do that, I've noticed that like it makes them worse PMs somehow. Because then you start looking like so closely at the career ladder, and guess what? No career ladder is perfect. I don't care how hard you try. That's why Google keeps changing how they do performance evaluations all the time. And everyone's just like, Google does it this way. And then guess what? And a year later, they don't do it that way. And like, well, Google does it. It's like, no, nobody knows how to do this in a really effective. Yeah, there's some people who do coaching on stuff, but no career ladder is perfect. So if you start saying, I want the next title, next promotion, and you look at the career ladder and you're like, I'm doing all of these, and yet you're building sucky products, you're not going to be a good PM. Yeah, you might get promoted, but you're still a lame PM, you know? Because your motivations are dirty, you know? You just want the promotion. Now, you might say my motivations might also be dirty with like freedom and all stuff, but I just want to build Coop. Like, obviously, I want to do really well financially. I think everyone does, but my biggest motivator is I want to have freedom and I want to build cool stuff and I want to build something where people are like, oh my gosh, I love this so much.
I love that. How do you prepare to be in that top 10% that you talked about of being amazing product managers? How do you prepare when you are not in a product role and you want to get into a product role? What does that path look like to from the beginning have the goal to be in that top 10% of amazing product managers?
Well, I think it's a tough question because there's so many different scenarios, right? Like you might be in an MBA or you might be in like operations, or you might be like a software engineer, or you might be whatever. And I think they all are a little bit different. So trying to come up with something that might be helpful for everyone is, I just think like, again, be in whatever you do, be used to just being obsessed with finding truths, right? Like, I don't know, if you're in operations or supply chain or something, I don't know. If you're just like obsessed with finding like what is actually causing this bottleneck and how can we actually like reduce it? And like, I'm going to go talk to people on the floor. I'm going to, you know, all that, like being used to just like stop worrying so much about your next promotion and just worry more about adding value and finding out in reality what is happening and whatever you're doing is very helpful. But you know, you might do a lot of stuff and you might still like not be have a good resume to land a good PM job. And so, you know, being able to pass the screening interview or like have a resume that people are interested in for product, doing things that will help you pass the PM interview and doing things that will make you a good PM. Unfortunately, those three things are very different things that you can do to prepare for.
What are some of those differences? Let's maybe talk resume and then we can go from there.
Sure. So resume, you know, for product management, you're looking at a few things. You know, I've screened like thousands of resumes at this point in my life, and depends on how picky the company is, right? Like if the company is just like a nobody, they can't be as picky. So they're just happy that someone applied for the position, right? So most likely if you're in a good point in your career, you don't want to work for a company like that, right? Unless they have a product that is like nobody knows about and you know something nobody else does and you're like, this is going to be huge, then sure. But if you're going to like some company, let's say like Duolingo, like Dropbox or like Lucid, whatever, not, there's a few things that will help you. One is like names, right? Like this is why people go to Harvard, because if you went to Harvard, it means you got into Harvard. Nobody cares what you learn at Harvard. They just know you got in, right? So, hey, if Harvard thinks you're pretty smart, it probably means you are kind of pretty smart. It's a good chance that's true, you know? And so someone else did the job for you of finding if you're just a capable human being, right? So names in your resume, that's what helps, right? Like Harvard, great. If you can get a Harvard, sure, get into Harvard. If you can, if you have Google on your resume, obviously that's good, right? Like there's all these companies that are very hard, everyone wants to get to. If you got in, then you got in. That's a big deal. So names is one thing, from schools to professional education, whatnot, in the resume. Now, if you can't do that, because for example, I don't have that. I didn't do that. I think startup experience really helps, if I'm being honest, because it means you're someone who takes risks. It means that you care about building stuff. I mean, honestly, people who join startups are kind of dumb. But or who do startups, they're either very kind of dumb or they're brilliant, right? But most likely they're kind of dumb. But because the risk to like to reward it's a very risky formula, right? So anyways, but if you do that, it means like, hey, look, this person probably did a lot of kind of work and very, you know, risk takers, and they were probably wearing many hats and they have some real experience. Versus if you get an internship at Google, chances are you did nothing, right? It just means you got into Google. If you didn't show up at Google, it means you did nothing. You just, oh, wow, you did nothing, actually. You probably did nothing if you have that, right? But it's still cool because you got in, right? Versus if you do a startup, yeah, it might not be a great name, but you did something. You did some cool stuff. If you were there for like 3-4 months at a startup, probably means they put you to work. They didn't take you to a baseball game and give you hats and, you know, and tour of the office. I know they'd be like, show up and be like, here's your computer, get grinding. You know, what I recommend people doing is like, look at Y Combinator, look at all the startups they've invested in the last few years, and get in one of them. Start messaging all the CEOs, like see if there's position opens. Be like, look, I'll grind. Especially if you're fortunate enough that you don't need the money for a few months. Get in there, do like an internship for free and be like, dude, I'll do anything. Like, I'm so, your company is so amazing, blah, blah, blah. And like, I'm in, you know, let me in. And just network, you go in. And chances are they're like, actually probably some of them really want you. And so you get in and then you have now startup experience and you have Y Combinator in your resume, which is a big deal. So you go in like, blah, blah, blah. You know, you were a PM internship. Company parentheses Y Combinator batch 2020 or 2020, whatever. Like, wow, okay, this was a legit company. Now, see, like, last thing I'll say about it is like, I'll see a lot of people go in and say, well, I did my own startup, but you can tell, and you can tell when people are doing it for the resume bullet point versus when they actually want to do a startup. And I hate it when people do it for the resume bullet point because that means that they didn't care about finding truth, they didn't get a good experience. A relevant experience, right? They're like, I increase signups by 250%. That means that they went from 5 to like 12 people who use their product, you know? That's what that means. Like, it's so easy to read through it. Like, if you have numbers like that, it means like nobody's using the product. So it's so easy to like to know who's actually doing it because they want to do something versus they're just bullet point.
How did you go about teaching yourself product management so that you could be one of those, you know, top 10% great product managers?
Just trying to do stuff, honestly. Like, I went to some training stuff. I went to Marty Kagan's workshop. you know, I'd done some stuff like that. They were all BS. Because the issue with it is that they teach you things that don't matter, right? Like, oh, here's how you run a sprint. Like, who cares? Honestly, man, like, just read an article. I don't know. Like, have someone sit down with you and tell you in 5 minutes what you do. So when I went to Lucid, I had never run a sprint before. I didn't know what the heck that was, you know? And they're like, oh, you know, we just meet and we plan for the next week or 2 weeks. And then we, you know, this is how it works. And you do it. It's not rocket science, you know? So, for example, honestly, if you get a certification about like Agile Scrum Master certification or Product Manager certification, I actually think that looks worse on your resume than if you had nothing. At least that's just kind of my perspective, because like, honestly, that stuff doesn't help you at all. It just means that like now you can run a sprint. And guess what? That has no correlation with you being a successful PM, right? Like, oh, you can now create a product, like a spec requirement document. Like, okay, that has zero ties into you have been successful. You can know nothing of product management, of like, here's how you run an effective brainstorm. Here's how you meet, you know, you should have one-on-ones with your colleague, your like engineer manager. Oh, here's how you write a like a product specification, like all that stuff. You can know nothing and still be an amazing PM. And the opposite is true. You can be really good at that stuff and be a sucky PM. And that's kind of where it is. That's where 80% of the PMs are. They're really good at that stuff that don't matter, right? It's kind of like we're babysitters of the product, right? Like the CEO or whatever, the founder created this product. It has a wave of usage, and you're just there for like moving the button to the left. And you know, we need better sign-ins. And you know, it's like, okay, you're a babysitter. It's kind of what you are, you know, just like tying things up and like this screw is coming, fine, but I'm gonna screw it back up. And you're not really thinking about building the next thing and growing that wave, I guess. The best thought leadership for product management comes from entrepreneurship. It doesn't come from product management. Compare that, for example, with reading like The Hard Thing About Hard Things from Ben Horowitz. Oh my gosh. That book is like amazing. Compare that with 0 to 1 from like Peter Thiel. Wow, that is thought leadership. You know, like that's the type of stuff that is like, that has been super helpful in my career and in my life. It's just like, go to the ones whose only option was finding truth and adding value. If you're learning from those who are just like, their career was like, oh, you know, I got promoted, whatever, like, who cares? Versus like, this person built a $3 billion company and sold it. Or like, look at the life of Steve Jobs, like his biography is like incredible. Look at the, you know, there's some biographies of Elon Musk. The actual writing is not as good, but like all this, I've learned so much more from entrepreneurs and their experiences than I've learned from any other PM fluff book out there.
But how do you sift out the noise of, you know, bad content to actually content that's actually helpful in learning and growing?
You know, maybe here's a rule of thumb. If the book, anywhere in the book, has the word sprint, throw it away. If anywhere in the book it has the word agile, throw it away. You know,
Scrum, that's it. Or Kanban?
Yeah, just throw it away. Yeah, just literally grab it, throw it away, move on with your life. That's what I would say.
So you mentioned a couple of books before. What would be your top three book recommendations of these are the most helpful books for a product manager to read?
0 to 1 is a great book. Hard Thing About Hard Things is a great book. Steve Jobs' biography is a great book. The User Method. I 1000% believe everything that's in that book. It's really good book. And I would just recommend that to anyone who wants to like build a startup or wants to just add value in general. It's like it's a great book.
Okay. I want to come back to your story because you said something in your story that I want to draw from and understand better. You talked about getting a job at Dropbox and that being one of the biggest mistakes that you've made. How did you realize that was a big mistake?
I do think that was one of the biggest mistakes in my life, but I also think that was one of the best decisions that I have made, because I learned so much about myself. So the story there is, you know, I was planning like, hey, I think it'd be great to have Dropbox in my name, right? Like, I don't have any good names. And I just talked about how you should have good names, right? So at the point, you know, I'd done a startup. I work at Jane, which was like pretty much a startup. I went at Lucid, which now they're valued over $2 billion. I think at the moment that was not the case. I was like in the 100, like early 100 employee. And then I went to Dropbox where I was a nobody. What I had ownership over was involuntary churn. So people who stop paying for a subscription and they didn't really mean to stop paying. Like, for example, their credit cards failed and they forgot to put in the, or they changed their credit card. Like, I lose my credit cards all the time and all of a sudden, like, my website's down because, oh, my payment didn't go through and I didn't check my email, right? So, you know, that stuff, that type of stuff. So I was this like cog in the, and I remember seeing like there was a big problem with the product and I was like, we should fix that. Like, here's all the data and all stuff. And they're like, this is great. Can you send an email to so-and-so for the, oh my gosh. And I had inherited this project that has been in the works for like a year before I joined. And it was going to, like, I was going to take another year and a half before it was out. And I was like, I can't do this. Like, I have no meaningful say on anything that meaningful in the product. I was in this cog in this part of this big machine, and my project was going to take months, if not years, to see the light of day, you know? And I did find, I did some things actually that like increased revenue by a few million bucks. It was like, I found that like some emails weren't triggering for like telling people that their credit card's about to expire. And then we turned that on and like, it was like a $22 million thing that like, that we were losing out of. And so I still added value even though it was only for a few months, but, oh, I felt like trash. And I was like, oh my gosh, I never want to work at a company where I can't have a meaningful say in the direction of the product. So obviously I cannot get a job where I'm like the director or the chief product officer at Dropbox, you know, at least not at a time. And so I'm going to go somewhere smaller, you know, where I can have a meaningful say on the direction of the product, but that's not going to eat me up. So the religious part of me, right, it's like, there is one of my religious leaders, his name is Eller Holland, and he said like he had this trip, but he was in the desert and with his son, and they were going back and they got in a fork in the road and they didn't know which way was home, and it's getting darker, and they're like, oh my gosh, which way do we go? So him and his son like basically said a prayer and it's like, God, please help us know which path is right. And they both felt like they should turn right or left, I don't know, turn right. So they're like, great, let's turn right. So they turn right, and then like not too late after, it's like a minute or so after, I don't know, they found out it was a dead end. And they're like, oh, there's a dead end here. So they like turn around and took the other one, and they, you know, eventually they got home. And his son asked him, was like, Dad, why did we both feel like we need to turn right if that obviously was the wrong like direction to go? And he said, you know what? It's like maybe God wanted us, his objective was for us to get in the right path as fast as possible with as much confidence that we're going in the right direction, right? And by so doing, us going in the wrong path for a short period of time and then knowing for certain that we are in the right path moving forward was the best way for him to accomplish his purposes, right? And that's what exactly why I felt that going to Dropbox, I was like, oh no, this is not what it was like. Eating me up. And then I realized, oh, this is who I am. This is the type of experience that I want to have in my career. And this is what I want to be doing. And if something doesn't fit the bill, I'm not going to make the same mistake in the future. So then going to Duolingo was just refreshing. I was like, oh, yes, this is what I want to do in my life.
So, and I don't want to put words in your mouth here. So I'm going to ask a question that might seem that way. But would you say that is something that an up and coming product manager should look at, is the companies that they're applying to or looking to get into, will they have a meaningful say? And is that a good way to evaluate a potential place to be?
You know, I don't think so, if I'm being honest, because there's actually different type of PMs. Like some PMs actually are good at and like the situation that was in. That's what, like, if someone asked me, like, oh, if I can go to Dropbox in a situation that you're in, would you recommend it? I'd be like, maybe. It depends on who you are, right? There's a lot of my colleagues that work there, like, they didn't mind it. They had a lot of purpose in their life, and it felt like they were doing great stuff, and good for them. And you can definitely do that. I wasn't used to that, so that really ate me up. So I don't think that's necessarily true for everyone, but it was definitely true for me. And so what I would say is, like, you know, if you don't mind that, it's not a problem. Honestly, probably like most PMs wouldn't mind being in that situation that I was in. I think it'd be fine, you know, be like, yes, yeah, it's life, you know. But I don't know. That's what I was like at the point at that time. I was like, oh, I should interview. I was interviewing at Google and I think Instagram at the time, and that was the first job, and I had a deadline, and so I just like stopped with the recruiting process. The other ones, but I was like, oh, I do not want to work at some huge company, at least not as a somewhere where I don't have a meaningful say in the direction of a product that I'm working on.
Gotcha. We've asked kind of questions that lead up into, okay, why product management, but I'd love to know from your perspective of why not product management? Why should people not want to be in product management if they're looking at product management going, yeah, that seems like something I want to do? What would you say to say, oh, well, actually, you might not want to do this because?
Yeah, that is a great question, Ash. So, you know, I think there's a lot of reasons not to do product management, just like any other function, but I think there's a lot. One thing I'll say, Ash, is like, you know, I see this a lot from people coming from school, particularly coming from MBA programs, where they see product management as this kind of like the sexy thing to do and to add to your resume. And it kind of reminds me of, you know, when I was in school, right, where I was studying business strategy. The situation is there's so much peer pressure in any situation, in any school that you're in, right? And so when I was in school, I was always comparing, like, people are like, I got a 720 in the GMAT, and I got a job at McKinsey, and, you know, I'm gonna blah, blah, blah. And you're like, oh my gosh, like, I'm a loser, you know? And everyone's going to McKinsey, Bain, BCG, all this kind of like big consulting firms. And you're like feeling spurred, like, oh my gosh, like, I gotta get in. Like, what do I wanna do? And you're like, I wanna be a consultant. Why? Because everyone's doing this. And it seems like the right thing to do. And you know, you drink the Kool-Aid, and your professors were consultants, and like, you're like, this is it. The moment I stepped out of BYU, I was like, huh, I don't want to do any of this stuff. Like, I think the whole thing is a scam. And then that peer pressure just left. And then I was like, the world is so big. There's so much that you don't even know that it's out there. And there's like, and then I was like, what do I actually want to do? And it's like, I want to build my own stuff. Right? And it would have been a lot better story if that would have worked, right? But it didn't. But my point is, like, when you're in school, right, like, I see this from MBAs all the time. Like, you know, people talk about how product management is this amazing career and you want to build stuff. I think we all want to be creative. We all want to build things. And that's kind of who we are as our nature. But so they see this and they're like, there's almost a little bit of a peer pressure, right? Like, if you go to like some operation stuff, maybe it's not as sexy as product management. So they feel like, no, they should be doing that. But the moment you stepped out and you're like, forget everyone for a second. What do you actually want to do? That's the main reason not to do product management, right? Like, if you actually aren't interested in this stuff, like, don't do it. Like, especially we're in software, like, well, software is the sexy thing, it's scalable and all stuff. We need, you know what, like, working on physical stuff or services, it could be a really rewarding career as well, you know? And so get to know yourself. You know, one of the, I have this piece of advice earlier on in my career. The worst piece of advice that I had was do what you love. And then the best piece of advice that I've had was give up on your dreams while you're still young. So talking about the worst piece of advice of do what you love, it's non-actionable because most people don't know what they love. Do you love to be sitting down for 40 hours a week, like answering emails and meeting with one-on-one, being a manager or whatnot? Like, maybe you do, maybe you don't. But most people don't know what they love. And so you kind of have to go with the trial and error, right? We talk about experimentation and pivoting all the time, right? But like, why not doing that with our lives? Like, what? I don't know, experiment. And then on the best advice, give up on your dreams while you're still young. That's a good piece of advice. So I was driving from Pittsburgh. Yeah, I was working at Pittsburgh. I was driving to like the office one day and I was listening to NPS. And there's this guy who got kidnapped by pirates like a few years ago. And he was saying how he got kidnapped, and then the kidnappers were the pirates were telling him like, oh, we're asking like $3 million in ransom, whatnot. But hey, don't worry, this kind of blows off in like a week. Like, you're gonna be out in like a week or two. Like, it's not a big problem. So he's like, okay, just gotta stick with it for a week or two. And then like a week or two went by, and like 3 weeks, 4 weeks, and he's like, oh no. It's like, oh, don't worry, we're so close, like just like a few more weeks. And like that went on, like it's just like another month, a few more weeks. That went on for like a year. And he was so miserable, obviously because he was kidnapped, but also because like he's like, he felt like he was so close and he just, nothing happened. Then after a year, he decided to do something different. He said, you know what? I'm just gonna accept that this is my new reality now. Like, I'm gonna be kidnapped for the rest of my life. This is my new reality. Like, nobody's coming for me like this. And he learned to live with it. And he said that the first year was like 100 times more miserable than the second year. And the second year, obviously he wasn't, it's not like he was thrilled to be there, but he was just a lot better off. You know, he just did the best he could under this circumstance. And I feel like sometimes we have this hope, and the hope of like, oh, I'm going to be a billionaire. It's going to be great. And then the reason we're miserable is because of the disparity between what we're hoping to be doing right now and what we're doing. Instead of, dude, just focus on the present. Like, be you. Have fun today. Do the best you can today with the person you have today. And that will actually lead you to great places. So that's kind of what I mean on give up on your dreams while you're still young. You might disagree with me, as most people will, but I think it's a good piece of advice.
I actually am not going to disagree with you on that. I do think there's wisdom in accepting the reality that is before you, right? And I go back to Viktor Frankl and the book that he wrote, Man's Search for Meaning, I think is what it's called. He was a prisoner during the Holocaust and a psychologist before the Holocaust. And so he just kind of went in and had some really interesting perspectives from being a prisoner there. And it was sort of this, just, I'm going to accept my reality, but in the end, I know that inside that can never be captivated. That's where I have my autonomy or my freedom, right? Is my own will. Is, I think you mentioned autonomy and freedom before. So yeah, I think that's a beautiful statement. Well, thank you so much, Daniel. This has been such a fun conversation.
Yeah, it really has.
Always a delight to talk with you and listen to you.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, thanks so much, Daniel. Really appreciate your time today. Thanks for listening today. These people's stories are incredible. Each one is unique and comparable all at the same time. We hope you enjoy them as much as we do. As product managers, we are always looking for feedback. So please don't hold back. Let us know how we are doing. Before you go, please consider subscribing. Also, give us a rating. It really helps this podcast reach an even greater audience.